through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number three of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. One great hour to go here. And as we've been doing every single day at 2 o'clock, we've been examining a couple of Seahawks free agents. Today, we have a very special one that you may have forgotten about because of his suspension. Let's go.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy's off-season profile. A look at the key free agents, potential draft picks, and extension candidates for the Hawks championship run in 2020.
Let's go!
Contract extension profile.
Big Al Woods, defensive tackle, 6'4", 330 pounds, and after hearing the cut that we were preparing for the show, that's a controversial number of 330, might be a generous number. Al Woods, 32 years old, turning 33 in March, a 10-year vet in this league, was signed in 2019 and ended up playing 14 games and was suspended for faced a four-game suspension after he tested positive for PEDs. Now, that obviously was an unfortunate season of an ending, but Al Woods was a great signing for the Seahawks. He had his second-best career year in the NFL with the Seahawks. 32 tackles, 3 TFLs, 1 sack. And Al Woods is a guy that I really like personally. He's a guy that, you talk about the pros, he's a great run stopper. He's got great power. Like I said before, his production was the second-best of his career. And the best part about it is that he's cheap. At 1 year, $2.25 million is what his contract was last year, and it was actually more incentive-based than it was guaranteed. So you can actually lay out an incentive-based contract, and because of his suspension, the way the year ended for Al Woods, I think that you actually can offer him an even cheaper deal to Al Woods this time around. Al Woods, the only cons that I have for Al Woods is he's a rotational player. He's not going to be in every single first, second down type of defensive tackle. There's very little pass rush ability, and obviously this is a patchwork situation. It's a short-term solution in terms of your defensive line. But overall, I think Al Woods has that really great run-stopping ability, and he made some big plays here, none bigger than in cut number one.
Goff takes the shotgun snap, and he runs upfield, and Woods grabs him. No, the official says he made it. Official on the far side of the field says he broke the plane in the end zone. He almost got broken in half by Al Woods. And let's see. I'm certain that they're going to replay this and take a look.
After reviewing the try, the runner was short. The try is no good.
Huge two-point stop in that Los Angeles Rams game the first time around that really helped win the game for them. Big-time play. And here's Pete Carroll having a little fun with that big-time play there. And cut number two.
He's about 350 bills now. He's a big man. Al can stop just about anything now. So that was a bold effort by Goff to try to think he could knock that one in on him. You know, so I'm not surprised he could make that play. But it was a fantastic moment for us because here we go again. We got to go back to the drama, and here we go back to the replay and the whole thing. You know, which just made the night a really memorable night.
Now, here's one of the reasons in cut number four why Coach Carroll really likes Al Woods here in Seattle.
You know, we brought him in here to play. We brought him in thinking he was going to play. And really, we brought him in with the thought that, like we have been in the past, we've always liked to have him in the big three technique, and he's, you know, huge. And his spirit for the game, his willingness to run around and chase the football with the big man is all you could hope for. So we have thought of him as a guy that's going to play on the early downs for sure, maybe not necessarily in the nickel groups, but... he's done everything we needed to see, you know, and he had some big plays, big stops last week again, and so real positive.
It's a very solid run stopper on early downs, a guy that has great energy at that position, and once again is a cheap option, a short-term solution on the interior for your defensive line. Al Woods, to me, is a no-brainer in terms of a guy that you would re-sign here in Seattle.
You know what we really take for granted? We watch these guys, these quarterbacks on TV, and they take shot after shot after shot, and they just get up. But on that highlight, for Jared Goff to be trying to sneak it in, running into Al Woods, I mean, you played against guys that big. How much does that hurt?
It does hurt a lot, but you know, with the way that Goff got hit, it was more of kind of like a side thing.
Swipe.
And it didn't hurt. But when you have those guys, the worst part about it is not necessarily the contact. It's about when they land on you. When they land on you, like their full weight landing on you, that is the part that hurts the worst.
Like if you recover your own fumble and you got to go down and everybody lands right on top of you.
It, absolutely brutal. So, you know, sometimes, you know, obviously there are hits that really get to you, but oftentimes if you see these big hits, sometimes they're so clean that they really don't hurt you that much. Yeah, they don't hurt that bad. But with those big boys, and they hit you and they land on you in any sort of way, you're going to feel the impact of the ground and them. And it's not a whole lot of fun. But Al Woods is a guy that I really enjoyed watching play. I thought he played a tremendous role on this defensive line. And it's no wonder when he was out with his suspension that their run defense took a nosedive.
I know Stacey might talk in a second here about what he's going to cost. But if they don't re-sign him and bring him back, he's the type of player that you're going to be on the lookout for anyway, right? Like, every team could use an Al Woods. It just depends on what the price is, how long he's been with you, how old he is, etc. Take it away.
Yeah, I mean, so the contract, like Jake said, the one he originally signed was 1 year, $2.2 million. A lot of that was with guarantees, so you had $400K guaranteed at signing. You had a week one bonus, things like that to incentivize, like a per game pay. You had things to incentivize him to stay on the roster, which I don't think is that unusual with older players. And I know 32 isn't that old, but he, I think, could still command a similar contract with similar incentives built into it. And I wouldn't be shocked if the older you get, the more and more that becomes incentive-laden contracts. So again, it's a cheap re-signing. And like Jake mentioned, he hasn't excelled with the pass rush, which he's a defensive tackle. Like, it's a good thing that you still excel against the run and stuffing that. But another thing to consider is that the interior defensive linemen that Seattle has under contract are two. Puna Ford, who started last year, and Brian Monet, who spent most of the year on the practice squad. Undrafted free agents and unrestricted free agents and a restricted free agent include Brandon Jackson, Jaron Reed, and Quentin Jefferson. So I know that when you think about the defensive line and when we thought about our priorities this offseason, a lot of that centers on the edge rushers. And when you think, well, you need to strengthen the pass rush, that makes sense. But don't forget how important the interior of that line is and that it's also an area in which they do need some help.
And depending on what they end up going out and spending on their edge rushers, maybe they can afford to get a dynamic guy on the inside and the interior. But ultimately, the priority has to go to the edges. It has to go to pass rush. And so if that's where the priority is going to be, you can find guys like Al Woods out there. And I think Al Woods having a really good, strong year with the Seahawks in year one, I think they would be comfortable enough bringing him back in year two, despite, you know, finishing the season testing positive for PEDs. I think it would make a ton of sense for them to be able to go cheaper on the interior with their defensive tackles and be dynamic on the edge with their pass rush.
Would it surprise you if they drafted a D lineman like in the maybe
third round? Not at all. It wouldn't surprise me if they ended up getting a defensive tackle.
Yeah,
that's
what I mean.
If they went and drafted a defensive tackle in the second and third round, I think that would make a ton of sense. But ultimately, I believe that they would probably go the cheaper route through the draft or through a player like Al Woods and really try and go after and get expensive on the edges in the free agent market.
You know who I love? Is Javon Kinlaw coming out of South Carolina.
I love him too, but guess what? He's going to get picked way too early for the Seahawks to have a chance of a crack at him.
Yeah, we got to trade up to get him.
Yeah,
that'll definitely happen.
He's tall, he's explosive, he's a dominant pass rusher.
These your notes from your scouting?
No, these are actually notes that I made last year.
Is he heavy-handed? Is he good bender?
No, he can't bend at all.
Oh, okay.
How much of this is just stuff that's created and made up and, like, no one really knows what it means?
Well, I'll tell you what's factual. He's 6'6", 310 bills. And he was a senior last year. Huh?
That is factual. It is funny how scouts, how they just come up with the most absurd descriptive language in terms of talking about the human body. It is just, it's very weird how detailed they get with, you know, their arm their arm length and
your wingspan.
Like heavy
hands. Like he's going to have to fly.
Yeah, heavy hands. What is
heavy hands? Well, no, the wingspan is important, though. I've never heard a better example than when Pete Carroll talked about Puna Ford's wingspan and how much that made up for his height, because he was overlooked for being 5'11", for being a petite, and his wingspan was that of someone who would be like 6'7".
What's another term for wingspan?
Is there one?
No, I don't think so.
Wingspan makes sense. I think I'm okay with that one. I think the weirder ones are when they say like hippie or things like he's a bit hippie. You're like, what?
you sound like
someone's like mean like grandma or something. It's like,
she's a little leggy.
Yeah. Come on, man.
Would it surprise you if one day you saw Puna Ford flying? Because of his wingspan?
You know, I don't know.
I see what you did there.
Pete looks for unique skill sets, and I don't know of any defensive tackles
who can fly. This is another true one from the 425. And guys aren't tall. They're long. He's got a lot of length.
He's
not a tall corner. He's a lengthy corner.
I thought length was more in the NBA, though.
There's a funny tweet from Jim Nagy, who is the director of the Senior Bowl, and he was a scout here for the Seahawks. And there's a funny video that ended up going viral, and he responded with it with a bunch of these analogies that often are heard. Top-heavy athlete, heavy-footed, waist bender with poor balance and body control. His hit point of no return quickly, high center of gravity, and marginal recoverability are limiting factors.
It's just that's jargon.
Those are the types of descriptions that you get in a scouting report back from all these guys, and you've got to dissect that as a coach, as a GM. As a head coach, it's
I have a question related to our free agent profile. If the Seahawks bring Al Woods back, which you think they will, correct?
Yes,
If they bring him back, he's a starter or kind of a rotational depth guy? I know that rotation means something different on a defensive line because you do just rotate more often. But is he your kind of immediate starter there unless you...
It depends on what they are able to bring back. To me, I look at Al Woods and Puna Ford as that one spot that they are able to rotate at both of those spots. So Al Woods and Puna Ford are playing the same position, and they're rotating on first, second down.
So you need someone else there where Jaren Reed would be.
Correct. Okay. Yes. Yep. You do need somebody else to be in Jaren Reed's spot and to have somebody to rotate with Jaren Reed to make that defensive line have the proper depth for them to be a legitimate front that can stop both the pass and the run.
Do you think we can get Ross Blacklock?
He was actually mocked drafted by Daniel Jeremiah to go to the Seahawks, actually.
Really? He's a super athlete. You know?
Yes. He's DJ's favorite defensive lineman in this draft.
He sounds like a detective from 1910.
The only problem
is
about the school he's coming from.
Texas Christian?
TCU.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't deceive with Texas Christian.
That's what I call it.
Yeah, yeah. The
university.
So it gives you a little bit of hesitation. They're not the same player.
They're not known for their D-tack.
Well, no, LJ
Collier came from TCU.
You know who else, though? Joey Hunt. Yes, TCU. Yes, yes. Horned Frogs.
Yeah, Joey Hunt came from TCU, too.
Yeah, he and I got into a debate about purple, whether it's a good or bad color.
Does he like it?
Yeah, he's a purple fan.
Okay.
Do coaches really get afraid of where past busts have gone to college?
Well, yeah. I mean, they would be under the same coaches and coordinators, so
yeah,
I think part of you is wondering.
Maybe.
And
isn't
the conference.
Kind of a stigma in the NFL that Alabama players kind of break down in the NFL?
Yes, there is, and for whatever reason, the Baltimore Ravens, they go against that because they love, at least when Ozzie Newsome was the GM, he loved picking Alabama players.
There's guys that have...
But yeah, absolutely, there is that. And then for a little bit, UW, there was, you know, talk about it being DBU. And you look at the success of all those guys in the NFL, it's not like any one of them has necessarily blossomed into a superstar outside of Marcus Peters. Those guys have been okay players so far, but they were first-round, can't-miss type of players.
Wasn't that mainly, though, with Alabama because they put so many guys into the NFL, they're going to have more guys to get
hurt.
I mean, they still have stars. I mean, Julio Jones. Didn't Derrick Henry go there?
I think part of the critique would
Trent
come
Richardson.
From you guys are playing more
Kenyon
games.
Drake.
You're playing in championship games. You're playing longer. You're playing in a tough conference. I think however much truth that has to it, I think you're right in that if there's more guys from a school, you're going to have more busts. But I think part of it is this assumption that Alabama is so hyper-competitive and they play, you know, a lot of games and in a tough conference that maybe their bodies have more wear and tear.
That could be.
Well, I mean, that could be true for a lot of schools, but I think the more successful a program, I think they're going to get labeled with that.
Hmm. Let's go through some NFL headlines. Hey, I have a wacky idea for Chris Carson.
What's that?
I was complaining about starters in baseball diminishing their importance, right? Like, now you've got the opener, you're pulling your starter in, like, the fifth inning because you want to save his arm and all this stuff. Why don't we save Chris Carson until, like, the middle of the season? Bring back Marshawn, start him for the beginning of the year for, like, the first five or six games.
Marshawn's the opener.
Right. Limit Carson. I'm not saying don't play him at all. Limit him. But then, as soon as the final championship drive kicks in for the end of the season, he's healthy and ready to go. Can you dig it?
Interesting. I'm trying to think about this here for a second.
Think about the value. How much does it matter that Chris Carson get, like, you know, 100 yards per game in the first 4 weeks?
I mean, for him and his numbers?
Right.
It matters. But ultimately, now you're talking about Todd Gurley, load management program,
yep,
that type of thing. The problem is that it would be nice if you could do that with a healthy Rashad Penny, but, oh, you don't. There is no healthy Rashad Penny.
Well,
so who is he going to
be? There might be.
Who's the 1-2 combination that you feel good about giving Chris Carson less carries to and giving more to another guy? I just don't see that there's a guy currently on the roster, but we'll see how the roster shapes up. Maybe they do find that guy to help out with that load at the beginning of the season, in which they can do that.
Don't you think they're going to? I'm obviously joking around. I'm not saying don't start him at all until week 6 or 7, but the point of it is, don't you think that they have to limit him a little bit more so than they have in the past? I mean, he carried the entire load last year until he got hurt.
Well,
and when they really needed him, he wasn't available.
Well, you're starting to jump aboard the let Russ cook part. So if you do that part of it, if you become a part of team, let Russ cook.
I am.
Now he throws more,
dude,
and Chris Carson takes less carries.
Jake,
so
that, I started the chant.
I know. That's what I'm saying. If you are on that, this fits your narrative. It fits another reason why you would do that.
Although if you're on the other side of things, you could say, well, there are other – if you're a top running back, that's not all uncommon. If you're Ezekiel Elliott, you're out there all the time. If you're Derrick Henry, you're out there all the time, and they made it through seasons. But I think that it's a fair thing to question how common that is. If there's only a handful of running backs that do that now, then, you know, you start to look at just defenses getting bigger and tougher.
It's too bad about Rashad Penny.
It is. It's
you were
really
so close. I remember before he was injured, you started coming around and being like, maybe I was wrong. Not wrong, but I'm willing to hold off.
Right.
I'm
going
to let it go.
Because I was calling him a bust for the first 5 weeks of the season.
But here's the thing, though. It's like, I hate to say it, is as much as he turned the corner and he was really starting to play well, we have to now find out what he's going to be like after this ACL tear. It's not something that you just... It's not something you easily come back from.
No,
it's like a
right?
restructure. Here's my question. Do you think... I'm not labeling either of these guys, but I think that fans would think that the two last first-rounders, Rashad Penny and LJ Collier, have underperformed. Who steps into a better role, or who performs and meets standards? Who's more likely to do that in 2020?
Between those two?
Between the two of them.
Boy, Penny.
I mean, they're
off.
Both under contract. They're not going anywhere unless you trade them.
What was Collier's injury? Was he ACL also?
His was...
No, it was just a sprained ankle.
It was
a sprained ankle, Tom.
Because he came back at the end of the year.
No, he came back.
He was active for like 11 games.
This makes this worse.
I know. This is hurting this
conversation. He was back at the early part of the season, Tom.
Early part of the season?
Yeah, yep.
I don't remember
scratch.
Seeing him on the field until the end of the season.
Yeah, he didn't do a whole lot this year.
I think his first game might have been Pittsburgh.
Really?
Yes.
I think so. Okay, so of the two
good.
Of them, who has a chance to make a bigger impact? It's hard to meet the standards of a first rounder, but who has a shot?
Probably Collier.
I think Rashad Penny. After at least you saw some life from Rashad Penny. You saw plays being made even in his rookie year where people were, you know, giving him a hard time. At least he made some splash plays. LJ Collier, in 11 games in which he was active and actually took a significant amount more snaps than you would anticipate him taking or that you would guess, LJ Collier did not pop on the screen once.
I understand
not
that.
Not one
but,
time.
I understand that, but... A D lineman doesn't have to do as much to make an impact as a running back does. And coming off that injury, I think it's going to be just too tough for Penny.
And I don't disagree with you on that. It's going to be very tough for Penny, especially since he's going to be coming back in the middle of the year. So it's going to be really hard to get him integrated into everything and up to game speed in that time frame. LJ Collier just really scares me.
Falcons are considering parting ways with Devontae Freeman.
Let's
jump on that one.
It's for the Falcons. They are in such bad straits with their cap situation.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really, really rough for them. So Devontae Freeman is a guy that they would love to keep around, but financially they gotta start making some sacrifices here. And yeah, maybe Freeman ends up here, but I wouldn't want him on a major contract. That wouldn't be a good spend of resources, in my opinion.
If Colin Kaepernick wrote a memoir, would you be interested in reading it? Because he's planning on doing that.
Yeah. I mean, it was one of the biggest stories in the NFL the last couple years. I'd be
curious. No doubt about that.
It is one of the biggest stories. I wouldn't be too keen to...
I wouldn't read it.
And here's the thing. It has nothing to do with political views. It has everything to do with the... For me, I still fully believe that Kaepernick's, you know, tryout and all that, it was just all charades. It's just at some point you're still trying to be relevant in the conversation. And, you know, you're doing a lot of great stuff in activism and all that. And if that's what you want to do, then go and do that.
If there's anything in there, Stacey, that we don't know about already that's like juicy and revealing,
I'll tell you. I'll pass that along.
Well, yeah. I mean, then I'd be interested in hearing about it for sure. But if it's all just a rehashing of things we already know, then probably not.
What else do we got on here,
Ron
Tom?
Rivera selling all of his Panthers gear in a garage sale for charity. That's nice.
I love that. Ron Rivera.
I wonder
really
how much he has.
Out.
Like, how much does a coach accumulate over, say, 10 years or so?
It's got to be closets full.
A lot.
Like, in his garage. Think of all that. Like, how many... Like, Star Latulale jerseys does he have in there?
Countless. Hundreds. Everything you wear. Every single thing.
And he's got the good stuff. He doesn't just have, like, the off-brand. Like, he's got the best of the best. I would be all over that if I was a Panthers fan.
And I like that's for charity. Can you imagine if it wasn't? He's like, I'm just having a garage sale.
He's just taking rid of the money. Let's take a look at what's on tap.
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. So, folks, what's on tap?
UW taking on USC tonight at 6 on ESPN2. USC's going to crush him.
Curtis, what you said an interesting stat yesterday, something that, you know, something had to give in this one.
Oh, Washington, they've beaten USC 4 times in a row. But they've also lost 6 games in a row.
Ooh, which one do you think is going to give?
I think we all know which one is going to give.
Oh, come on, Curtis.
Say it.
They own the Trojans. The past 4 games, man. They've won every one.
What if they're their kryptonite?
Nah. Huskies they're going to get railroaded tonight.
You're telling me they're their own kryptonite?
Not even lose. They're getting railroaded.
Yes.
Man. Curtis Rogers spares no feelings.
They're retiring DeMar DeRozan's number.
I think that's worthy of retirement.
Well, I mean, given the star he's become in the NBA or because of his time there?
Probably because of the star he's become in the NBA.
Makes sense.
I mean, who else have they developed in the last 30 years?
OJ Mayo, baby.
Yeah, orange juice mayonnaise.
The Cougs are taking on UCLA. Now they're at UCLA. They beat UCLA earlier in the year. On their own home court. That's going to be at 8 right here on these airwaves, 710 ESPN Seattle. We got to get back into this cheating thing coming up next. I got a couple of questions from my co-host here, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
I used to call, we were just talking in the break here about some names that we mix up. I used to call Derwin James Darwin Jones.
Oh, no. Not even close.
Well, kind of. It's not that far off.
Derwin James, Darwin Jones.
I used to tell Brock, I was like, yeah, I really want the Seahawks to get that Darwin Jones guy.
And he was like, did he humor you and say like, yeah, for sure?
No, he used to correct me. Where'd he come out of anyway? Florida State?
Florida State.
Yes.
Seminoles, baby.
Got it.
You're reading me all your scouting reports. They're so
Were you reading Jake's scouting reports?
Impressive.
Yeah, they're really in depth. There's this guy that I want. His name is Yetur Gross-Matos.
Okay.
He's an edge rusher out of Penn State. He's a prototypical defensive end with size and length. And Stacy, he grew as a pass rusher in 2019 by utilizing more effective moves at the point of attack.
Got it.
So
I need to make a mental note, Kyle. Don't forget this. We need to have Tom read scouting reports, dramatic readings of scouting reports.
I'm all in.
And
that.
I want you to sound as East Coast
sound
as you possibly
disgusting.
Can. Yeah. I want you to have the rage, like get fired up.
At the, point
the rage that you had at your neighbor.
Oh, my God. I don't know if I can get that high again. Yeah, I definitely I want this other wide receiver. His name is Brandon Ayuk. Is that how you pronounce it? Coming out of Arizona State?
I don't know. You tell us, man.
Yeah, you're the expert.
It doesn't say much about him. It just says that he'd be good for the Dolphins.
Can you imagine your scouting report has nothing, and they go, just good fit for Cincy.
Here's a good one. There's a safety coming out of LSU. His name is Grant Delpit.
Yep.
Okay. He's an intimidating presence and strong safety. Got good coverage ability. Pete Carroll will clean up his tackling issues, though.
Mm. Okay.
He'll fix him.
Yeah.
I like that. Yeah. I like that. Grant Delpit was on my Nike Elite opening 7-on-7 team back in the day. A couple years ago. Yeah. I mean, I coached him at one point.
Oh,
but
okay. I was going to say he'd be a little young for you.
Yeah, he is young. He definitely is young. But he was a high schooler at the time. High school
like
senior.
You heard it like they're on the same team.
Hey, I got a question for you guys. Since I offered my apology to my neighbor and then kind of congratulated myself for doing it by telling the story on the air.
Yeah.
You know, one important element of this whole Jim Crane Astros non-apology from this morning, he is doing it in front of the entire country. Like last night I did it just between me and this dude. I'll at least give Jim Crane a little bit of slack because sometimes when you're in front of the entire country, an entire press corps, maybe you get a little nervous. Maybe you sort of screw up your words a little bit. You know, I mean, the thing where he says we didn't cheat and then 55 seconds later, or no, he said it had no impact on the game. And then 55 seconds later, it may have had an impact on the game. Like, he's obviously not a good public speaker. You can cut him a little slack.
I don't cut him any slack.
Yeah. Come on, Jake.
No, I'm not doing it because here's why.
Jake.
He's got so much money. He's got a PR department. He's got everything at his disposal to coach him in that situation. You either, one, disregarded the material that they gave you, or you were so arrogant about the situation that you decided to say, this is how I'm going to approach it.
May I ask, is it cheating?
Excuse me?
He's hard of hearing, for one thing.
Oh.
No, Tom,
that's
please.
The first problem. He can't even hear.
He's old. He was walking into a press conference
about cheating.
He knew was going to be asked about cheating, and one of the first questions asked about cheating, excuse
and
me?
You know what? Why I know that's
like
what it is?
Like, he just threw him a curveball.
That's how we all respond when we've done something wrong. The minute you do something wrong and someone asks you about it, you always say, what? Because you need to buy yourself some time. Yeah. Did you eat my lunch? Huh?
Did I eat your lunch?
And then you're just thinking to yourself, what do I say?
Repeat the question back to him. That would have been better.
Did we cheat? As they said in the original and best Spider-Man, with great power comes great responsibility. Is that from Spider-Man?
It is.
Whatever.
Yes. Maybe, Peter Parker, yes.
Thank you.
May I ask, is it cheating?
Excuse me?
I understand that speaking in front of all of these people is scary, and it deserves... That's why doing this is kind of admirable in itself, but you didn't do it correctly. And yes, I am going to fault you for doing that because you're the owner of a team, and that's your responsibility.
At the end of the day, he does deserve to be put on blast. I'm not denying that. All I'm saying is I'm a sympathetic human being.
Yeah.
And I think more people need to be sympathetic.
Fair.
Can I submit?
May I ask? Is it?
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to submit. as Jake said, like, this guy, he's got all this experience. He's such a successful businessman. He's got PR people advising him, probably lawyers advising him. And then he still goes out and looks like an inept stoop.
You know why, though? He's got too many people around him confusing the heck out of him. Instead of just going out there and speaking from the heart on a very simple issue, he's got all these idiots and handlers around him confusing him and telling him how to lie.
But, well, Tom, you're giving this guy too much credit in the standpoint of, like, his hands are clean.
His hands are clean?
Well, you're saying that he's got all these people that are confusing him. I don't think he's confused.
They're telling him how to deceive the public. He doesn't need bad advice from them.
May I submit that he is doing this on purpose. He is clowning around and taking all the blame and all the spotlight on himself so that we will spend this entire day talking about Jim Crane, Jim Crane, Jim Crane.
That is
and
something.
Who are we not talking about?
The players.
Jose Altuve or Christian Braggs?
I don't think he's smart enough for that.
Oh, but Kyle,
now,
I like that.
That conversation, your submission, I think, is worth listening to. However, I will take my frustration out on Jim Crane. But I will not forget about Jose Altuve or Bregman. It will only fuel the fire for me to remember what they did and not allow me to forgive them. It would take me quite some time for me to get over
that.
You
know what? I'm still more mad at the players than I am Jim Crane.
Yes, I am. It's hard to separate either from just the organization as a whole. I think that's where more people fall. I'm just mad at the Astros.
Out there in front of the press. See how he answers those questions rather than the owner.
Rather than just do a statement to take questions. Because that's what they both did, right? They just read a statement.
Correct.
Okay.
Right.
And that's what Jim Crane should have done. He should have just read a statement. Instead of, you know, having that debacle.
Here's this should Bregman's be taught statement. In PR classes, like what not to coach someone to do.
I am really sorry about the choices that were made by my team, by the organization, and by me. I've learned from this, and I hope to regain the trust of baseball fans. I would also like to thank the Astros fans for all of their support. We as a team are totally focused on moving forward to the 2020 season. Thank you.
That's Bregman.
That's the totality of it. 35 mm-hmm. seconds.
That's all right.
Now, that right mm-hmm. there, I would be... Look, you can poke holes through that like people did with Tiger Woods when he came up and made his apology, and it didn't feel very sincere. I feel the same way in that, but I feel that way because of an interview that he gave like a month before this, him and Altuve. You know, Bregman was beyond defensive about this whole situation and was almost kind of attacking everybody. You know, just kind of saying. What are you guys talking about? We're still a great team. We're gonna go win. We're gonna go win games. It doesn't really matter. Like
maybe
that
he,
part
re-
of it,
maybe
I don't.
He, well, maybe he realized once the cat was out of the bag and these guys had been caught, there was nothing left for him to do than write that statement. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe. But you showed me your true colors already. That's how I feel.
Excuse me.
Excuse me.
Beg pardon.
Cheating. What? That came out of nowhere.
Huh? So how is it it doesn't affect competition? So then, what are you guys apologizing for?
We're apologizing because we broke the rules.
But isn't sign stealing a distinct advantage for the hitter, so doesn't it automatically impact competition?
It could possibly do that. It could possibly not.
Okay, guys, we're going to wrap up. Thank you, Dusty. Thank you, Jim.
Just immediately. All
That's
right. Let's
out you,
get
guys.
Out of here.
Let's get out of here.
Sorry,
she's asking too good a question.
Yeah. Saved by the bell.
Those are the people that are poisoning poor Jim Crane's mind.
Oh.
No, Tom, you don't even believe that.
Hey, Jim, go up there and be remorseful and start. Nah, I got this. I got this, guys. We don't need to do that.
This guy, Jim Crane, is the sacrificial lamb. He shouldn't have to take any responsibility.
At the end of the day, there is
you
no
can't
one
even
above
say that
you.
With a straight
There's
face.
There's no one above you. You own the team. It's your decision to make at the end of the day. If you decide to take that advice, that's on you.
He's not a baseball guy. Finance guy.
Tom, cut it out.
We sum it up.
Cut it out.
710 ESPN.
That wait is over.
They're going to wave him in.
It's time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back!
All right, Curtis, you can participate in this too, okay? I'm going to read a description of a draft prospect, but I want you to tell me which player that's current in the league it might be describing. Like, you could also use the
is
same
is it actually describing a real player in
it's
the league?
It's describing a draft prospect.
Okay.
But,
I like this.
But I'm going to read this description. I want you guys to apply it to an actual NFL player.
Okay.
All right? He does not have first-round athleticism, but he's the most polished coverage linebacker in the class and has a gigantic tackling radius. It's rare to find him out of place on the field. So he's a linebacker, polished in coverage, gigantic tackling radius. This guy is everywhere. And it's rare to find him out of place on the field. What current NFL linebacker might that be describing?
Man, oh, that's a good
what
question.
What if it's describing Bobby Wagner?
Yeah, I was going to say Bobby Wagner.
Yeah,
Bobby Wagner.
Although I do think his athleticism is
first round.
Is it first round?
Oh,
yeah.
Man.
Well, I was guessing that.
Definitely. I would say.
He's not the most polished coverage linebacker, though.
No, he's good, though. Yeah. Like, he's very good.
He makes tackles everywhere.
Maybe Alexander from
Quan Alexander.
Quan Alexander from the 49ers. That'd be my comp for that.
Okay.
I'm going to just say what Jake says.
But you could, I mean, I was thinking actually about both KJ.
Or
KJ Wright,
or Kyle Van Noy from the Patriots.
Who is it?
It's Troy Dye, linebacker out of Oregon.
Mm. Okay.
So these all are right, guys coming into this year's draft.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay, what do we got?
You want me to give you another description?
Just give me one more. Yep.
All right. I need to look for... Okay. An instant three-down defensive lineman who can win from anywhere across this specific coach's defensive front.
Okay, I would say...
So a three-down defensive lineman...
Right.
...who can basically play at any spot.
Any position. I would say that's Chris Jones from the Kansas City Chiefs.
Currently.
Currently, Chris Jones from the Kansas City Chiefs, he can play pretty much every position. He's a dominant defensive tackle. He's a very good defensive end. And is a very good pass rusher in both of those spots.
Jake took the words right out of my mouth.
AJ Espinosa out of Iowa, junior edge rusher there.
Can I do my sum it up really quick?
Go ahead.
Okay, because I want to make sure I get to this. So normally I would never respond to a negative text. I try to just, and you guys know this, I try to ignore them. It doesn't always work, but mostly you're just like, whatever. Like, there's so much more to talk about that's fun to talk about that it's not even worth bringing that into it. But two things. One, thank you for this texter in general for listening. I'm sure there are many things we agree on. But I disagree with this premise that wanting an apology is a woman thing or a female quality, which is what the critique was. I think that this is part of the problem.
Demanding an apology publicly?
I think the idea of an apology mattering that much.
Okay.
That they wanted more punishment, which I understand. I think that that's fair to want more punishment. But I don't think the idea of wanting an apology is weak. And I think that it's a problem in general to associate being a woman with being weak. But that's a separate issue that isn't relevant for right now. But I think that that's part of the issue that we have with this apology is you have all of these people right now, these players and the owner that can't string together an effective apology. And I don't think that we acknowledge, I don't know if it's just as people, that we acknowledge how difficult it is to do that, but how important it is. And you're not just doing it up there to do it and check off a box and say, okay, I did in your mind the least harsh punishment. I actually think it's really, really hard to give an apology. And you're not always going to get one back. You're not always going to get acceptance back. You're not always going to get someone accepting your apology. But it's important to do not just for your own accountability, but for growth and for the people watching you. And I know I would assume that there are parents who, if I have a child who these are his heroes, or I want him or her at all times to see those people that are in those positions of power modeling what I think is strong behavior. And a public apology where you take accountability for it is strong behavior.
Does it depend? Okay, I see what you're saying there. Is it fair every time somebody makes a mistake, though, to demand an apology?
At this level, I think it's
at that level.
At that level. This isn't something where it's like, okay, public apology. This is something where you did something wrong, and it is really, really hard to stand in front of a television audience and reporters, apologize for something you know you did wrong. There's no excuse you can say. You can't say, oh, this person told me. No, you just have to apologize. It's really, really hard to do that. And I think that by trying to devalue it or saying that it's something that's soft or doesn't matter, we take away like the skills we need to do that.
That's true. I think I'll add this. This isn't really a counterpoint. It's just adding to it. If we demand an apology too often, it will devalue the apologies we actually get. That's why I'm saying we need to pick our spots. When it's something that's this important, like this whole cheating thing or, you know, and I'm not trying to get political, but if a congressman or if a president does something that's like way outside the law, we start demanding things from them because we hold them to that high of a standard. If some actor just says something kind of off color that we're going to move right past, we don't need to be demanding apologies for that. It doesn't matter because otherwise we're going to cheapen the apologies that actually do matter.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Yes, I get what you're saying. In this case, I do understand that sentiment of wanting a strong apology because also what it does, it allows us to move on and move forward.
Yeah.
And you're robbing us as baseball fans to move on, right? And you're looking at it saying, okay, Jim Crane, what if I talked about him all day today? That he's arrogant. His answers are arrogant. Bregman, I think, is arrogant in his approach on all of this. And it doesn't allow me to forgive and move on because people make mistakes. People, especially in sports, you get caught up in winning, and sometimes you get so caught up in it that you go so far down the line that you forget where the line is. Like that's how dedicated you are and focused on trying to win at all costs. So people make mistakes. We can accept that, but don't be defiant when it's your time and it's your responsibility to the public to have some humility and apologize for it so we can move on.
The guy was set up. I mean, what do you want from me?
Tom, you are now, you're just trying to be a provocateur.
This whole thing was a big frame job. These guys didn't do anything wrong.
God. I feel like I need to preface
I can't
for
talk
late
to you
listeners
you
that
go,
you are kidding.
When you go down this road, I can't talk to you anymore, Tom.
All right, we're out of here. We gotta play a game show tomorrow. That's all I wanted to get out of my mouth.
Okay.
I don't care the football season's over. Right. We're going to play a game show. We're out of here. Tom, Jake, and Stacey, 710 ESPN Seattle.